Welcome to Gracious Words. Gracious Words is taken from the weekly women's Bible study taught by Cheryl Broderson at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.
We behold your glory, God, in the face of Christ. It shows us who you are.
As we look at the life of Joseph, we see the consistency of God's faithfulness. On today's program, we'll see how God fulfills a dream he gave Joseph 20 years earlier when his brothers come to Egypt seeking help and food. And now here is part two of Cheryl's message titled, The Vantage Point of Deliverance.
Joseph's face looks different. His hairstyle is different. His garments are different. Now, Joseph speaks roughly to his brothers through this interpreter. But even as he is roughly questioning them, he is flashing back on the dreams that God gave him over 20 years earlier. In his mind, he is seeing the sheaves of his brother bowing down to his sheep, Genesis 37:7. He's seen his brother as the stars that are bowing down to him in his second dream, Genesis 37:9. From Joseph's vantage point, he is seeing the promises of God fulfilled. He is seeing that God has kept his word to him, that those dreams were indeed divine. And you see, there are two dreams. The first dream is now being accomplished. The sheaves are bowing down to Joseph. But there's another dream. In the next dream, it will be Jacob and the wife of Jacob, and all 11 stars, Benjamin including, bowing down to Joseph. So do you understand what Joseph's vantage point is? He realizes that God is fulfilling all his word to him. Here is this word that God spoke so many years ago, but there's a greater word yet to come. Joseph tests his brothers. He accuses them of being spies, of coming to Egypt to seek out Egypt's vulnerabilities. He asks them pointed questions. How is your father? Is he still alive? How is his health? About their family. Do you have any others? Is there a younger brother? He demands that they bring their younger brother to his court. He says, you will not leave this place unless your younger brother comes here. Verse 15 of chapter 42. He commands that they send one of them back to bring the youngest brother to him. Verse 16. And then he places them all in prison for 3 days. Verse 17. Then he brings them out of the prison and he makes an arrangement with them. Do this and live, for I fear God. Verse 18. This word for God, Elohim, this is a Hebrew word, and it speaks of God as the Supreme One. It is the name of God, the Creator. It is the name that God first revealed himself to Abraham as. Then Joseph gives specific orders to his brothers. He tells them that they are to leave one of the brothers behind in Egypt, and that brother will be placed in prison. They are to carry back grain for the rest of their family to Canaan. They are to bring their youngest brother back when they return in order to verify the word they have spoken. The brothers begin to talk among themselves. And in their conversation that Joseph overhears, we realize that what they did to Joseph is still haunting them. This is what they say to each other. Verse 21. We are truly guilty concerning our brother, for we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us and we would not hear. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. For 20 years, these men have lived with the guilt of what they did to Joseph. For 20 years, they can still see the anguish on Joseph's face. 20 years later, they can still hear Joseph's cries, his pleadings with them. And for 20 years, they have attributed all their distress on what they did to Joseph, on the consequence of their actions. They recognize that they deserve the condemnation that they are experiencing. Reuben adds, did I not speak to you saying, do not sin against the boy? And you would not listen. Therefore, now his blood is required of us. This is how they feel. It's coming down. It's finally catching up with us. Here is what an earthbound perspective does. We deserve this distress. We are paying for and we will pay for the evil we did to Joseph. They are being treated as spies. They have not been believed. Their word has no credibility. They have been placed in prison. They are having to leave a brother in Egypt. What they have hidden for 20 years is coming to light and haunting them. How can they expect God to bless, protect, or deliver them after what they have been hiding and suppressing and the lie that they have been living under? Joseph overhears them discussing their guilt. And for Joseph, this is an incredible vantage point. This is more light to already good circumstances. He realizes now how they feel about what they did. He realizes that they have not been free from the condemnation of what they did to him, that God has been faithful to haunt them. God has been faithfully speaking to their hearts, convicting them this entire time. And he also realizes that Reuben tried to save him. Joseph has the divine vantage point. He is in the promise of God. His dreams are being fulfilled. He is hearing that the brothers did have guilt and continue to hold guilt for what they did. Joseph has never been forgotten. They haven't been able to move forward emotionally or spiritually, but Joseph has. Manasseh, God has made me forget all the anguish that I suffered in my father's household. Ephraim, God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. Joseph has moved forward spiritually. Joseph has moved forward emotionally. Joseph has moved forward physically. Joseph has even moved forward financially. Every area of Joseph's life has gone forward. The worst is over for Joseph. The worst is over. And the future only portends good. But these brothers have no such vantage point. They have no hope for good because they are on the wrong side of God. Yet Joseph knows that he is the salvation of his brethren, that he is their deliverance. He knows that he alone is able to save, enrich, bless his brothers. He knows that the circumstances and the famine are actually working for the brothers' good. He knows that these brothers need to be brought to repentance and to be made right with God. He knows that what these brothers have hidden needs to be brought to light so they will no more be living in lies or hiding in the shadows. He knows that the famine will be used by God to reunite the family, to deliver Jacob's family from death, to sustain them through the famine, and to exalt them in Egypt, and finally to bless them. What looks bad to the brothers is in reality the very best thing possible that could happen to them. Yet, Joseph does not reveal himself. There's a timing in all of this. He has to prove that the brothers are repentant. He must move them to the deepest repentance. We note in all of this too, Joseph does not have a hardened heart. He could be so hard to these brothers for what they did. Imagine if Joseph had chosen to hold a grudge and to blame every bad thing that happened to him on his brothers. How awful, how terrible these circumstances would be. But because Joseph has chosen to forgive, to keep his heart tender, he weeps. He weeps over his brother's guilt. He weeps over their hurt. He weeps over their pain. He weeps for his brother. It reminds me of Jesus when he sees Jerusalem and he weeps for them. And he speaks to Jerusalem and says, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, if only you had known the good things that God intended for you this day, but they are hidden from your eyes." And then Jesus spoke of the evil and the pain that would happen to Jerusalem, and he cried over it. Joseph turns away from them in order to weep. No doubt his eyeliner was running, and he had to turn away from them. And when he speaks to them again, he requires that one of the brothers be left in Egypt while they return to Canaan with the grain. And when they come back, they must bring their youngest brother. Simeon is the one who is chosen to stay in Egypt. Perhaps he is voted by the brothers to be the one to stay, or maybe he volunteers. Perhaps knowing Simeon's violent nature, remember it was Simeon and Levi that had fallen on the men of Shechem. Maybe they knew he's the most likely to survive in prison. He is bound before his brothers, verse 24, and he's taken to the prison. The brothers then start the 3-week journey back to Canaan, but they must stop at these different campgrounds, perhaps an oasis even, and stay the night. Now, one of the brothers, and we're not told which one, opens his sack in order to get grain to feed the donkeys. And when he opens his sack, he's astonished to find that all his money, all that silver, is in the top of the bag that's to hold the grain. In verse 28, he says, "What is this that God has done to us?" If they felt condemned and guilty before in the presence of Joseph, imagine the guilt they feel now. This is a test. Will they confess it, or will they pocket the money? Will they tell Jacob? Will they tell Joseph? It's a test of their honesty. When they return, if they tell the truth, their lives are in jeopardy. Will they tell the truth, or will they not tell the truth? Years ago, I remember going shopping at a store called Savon's. It's now CVS. And I went there and I needed some travel supplies. We were going on a little vacation with my parents. and I needed toothpaste. And I remember deliberating over which toothpaste I was going to get and kind of losing track of what I was doing. I was distracted by something. I had my daughter Kristen and my son Char with me at the time. Char was 3, Kristen was 5, and I got distracted. And when we went back to the church, because I went to the church, and I was talking to Brian, and I said, "Oh no, I forgot the toothpaste." And with that, Char said, "Not to worry." And he unzipped his little backpack and he had filled it with every single travel size toothpaste that they had had at Save-On's. Can you imagine? Just absolutely brimming, like some people have done with the paper towels from Costco or the toilet paper. His backpack was overflowing. And Brian and I looked at each other and I said, "You need to take him back to the store and have him confess, you know, that he took all these toothpastes. You know, Char, we have to take these back." And Brian said, "You're the mother. You need to take him back." And we begin to discuss amicably which parent was more qualified to take their son back and confess the toothpaste. We knew we couldn't just let it go. You know, we could not live with the guilt of all those stolen toothpastes on our conscience. In the end, our assistant pastor, Gaylord Tohill, volunteered to take Char back and to do the confession. And we were both very, very relieved. But I remember the guilt over that. What has my son done? And magnify that, you know, a billion times. This is the guilt these brothers felt when they found the silver in the sack. In the sack of grain, but it also was reminding them of the silver that they sold Joseph for. Oh, the guilt. Oh, the guilt. The brothers return to Jacob without Simeon. They relate their experience in the court of the prime minister of Egypt, including how they found the money returned in their sacks. By this time, they've all opened their sacks. They're honest with their father. They are not trying to pocket what they perceive to be an oversight by the Egyptians. Jacob, hearing all of this, concludes, "You have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more. And now you want to take Benjamin away. All of these things are against me." Verse 36, Jacob's earthbound perspective. Joseph is dead. And the potential of grandchildren or from a lineage from Joseph is over. To Jacob, God had failed his promise. Remember when Joseph related those dreams? And Jacob took it to heart. Why? Because he too had had a dream. And in his dream, he had seen the angels on a ladder going up and down to God. And God had spoken to him. It was through a dream that the promises conferred to Abraham were then conferred to Jacob. But God has failed. That which God seemed to speak to Joseph in Jacob's mind is not a possibility. Joseph, who was to be the patriarch, who was to be over the family, the firstborn from Rachel, in Jacob's mind is dead. And therefore, God has failed Jacob. Now, Benjamin is being required of him. He must surrender Benjamin, the son of his right hand, this son that he has protected with his life, this son that he has always kept in his sight, must be surrendered, that the livestock and his grandchildren will live. To Jacob, It all seems like a loss. There's a lost son. There's lost promises. There's lost provision. And he is looking forward to further loss. At this point, Reuben offers his sons in place of Benjamin. This is not a solace to Jacob. You know, Reuben says, "Oh, just let Benjamin be entrusted to me. And if he dies, you can have my two grandsons and put them to death." You know, the death of two more grandsons is of no comfort. Death for death is no comfort. Not only that, but Reuben's word does not hold any credibility with Jacob. Reuben had betrayed Jacob by his adultery with Bilhah. Reuben had not protected Joseph. When Joseph had gone to find his brothers, Reuben had been no protection. Jacob says, "My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead and he is left alone. If any calamity should befall him along the way in which you go, then you would bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave." It was when Jacob let Joseph out of his sight to go find his brothers that Joseph had died. He is certainly not willing to let Benjamin go with these same men. From his vantage point, again, from Jacob's vantage point, he does not realize that his distrust, his doubt, his fear, his resistance, his stubbornness is only delaying the promises of God. He does not realize that he is only keeping himself and his family from the blessings of God. It is only when Jacob is once again willing to trust God, to entrust to God, to sacrifice to God, that there will be any hope for sustenance and salvation. Can I stop for a minute and just say, there are some of you from your vantage point that think God has failed you. I don't know what you prayed that God didn't answer in the way you expected, or what God allowed in your life. Maybe the loss of a job, a transfer. I know a woman today who is still upset with God because of a job loss. She can't get past it. She can't get over it. No matter how many speak comfort or speak the promises of God into her life, she can't see the blessing of where she is right now or move forward in her life because of her distrust of God, because she feels that God failed her in allowing this in her life. What do you feel God has failed you in? What is that place that from your perspective you think God has failed? Where is it? What is that thing that is holding you back from all the promises and all the blessings? What is it right now that is stunting you from going forward spiritually, from going forward physically, from going forward even maybe financially, from going forward emotionally? What is that place? Let me tell you this, friends, it's only delaying the promises and the goodness of God. The goodness of God is waiting for you. It's waiting for you. Some of you need to forgive God for not doing it your way. You need to ask forgiveness from God for insisting that it be your way, your will above God's will. Your vantage point is only keeping you from God's goodness.
Sin will trap us and stop us from moving forward with God. But despite the cruel and unfair treatment of his brothers, Joseph never lost faith. His heart never hardened. Instead, he was set on forgiving his brothers. God used the famine to bring Joseph's brothers to Egypt to test and expose their heart. What looked bad to the brothers was the best thing that could happen. God was using hardship to liberate them from their guilt, to restore and reunite their family. God's heart is the same for us today, to reconcile and to restore. We hope you have been blessed by today's Bible study. For more information about the Gracious Words radio program and the teaching ministry of Cheryl Broderson, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. Coming up next time on the Gracious Words program, we'll look further at Joseph and his brothers as we continue our series, Our Great Creator, in the book of Genesis with Cheryl Broderson. We do hope you make plans to join us. Again, for more information, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.